This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report. Mrs. Schlafly is a constitutional attorney, pro-family leader, and author of 20 books, including Feminist Fantasies. And now the president of Eagle Forum, Phyllis Schlafly.
The national news media have not discovered it, but the issue that is bringing out hundreds of citizens who never before attended political meetings is Common Core education standards. More precisely, it is the attempt of Barack Obama's Department of Education to force all states and schools to adopt specified national education standards for each grade level that will dictate what all kids learn and do not learn. Common Core means federal control of school curriculum. That means control by Obama administration left-wing bureaucrats. Federal control will replace all curriculum decisions made by state and local school boards, by state legislatures, by parents, and even Congress, because Obama bypassed Congress using $4 billion of stimulus money to promote Common Core. It's not only public schools that must obey the Fed's dictates. Common Core will control the curriculum of charter schools, private schools, religious schools, Catholic schools, and homeschooling. The control mechanism is the tests. Kids must pass the tests in order to get a high school diploma, admittance to college, or even a GED. If they have not studied a curriculum based on Common Core, they won't score well on the test. Common Core cannot be described as voluntary. Since Common Core is so costly to the states, it's an estimated $15 billion for retraining teachers and the purchase of computers for all kids to take the tests. Common Core is foisted on the locals by a combination of bribes, federal handouts, and as the price for getting a waiver to exempt a state from other obnoxious mandates, such as No Child Left Behind. Don't be under any illusion that Common Core will make kids smarter. The Common Core academic level is lower than what many states use right now.
Has your son or daughter expressed frustration with the liberal ideology and anti-Christian propaganda on their college campus? Encourage any students you know to join Phyllis Schlafly and other conservative leaders in Washington, D.C. on July 18 and 19 for the annual Eagle Forum Collegian Summit. The conference is free to students who register in advance at eagleforum.org. That's eagleforum.org. And join us again for the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
Do you flinch when a police car appears in your rearview mirror or you get pulled over? Are you squeamish when an envelope arrives in the mail with a return address of a court, a government agency like the IRS, or some law firm? Would you like to escape government agency harassment? Then visit escapeharassment.com. George Bush allegedly says, "The government constitution is nothing but a doggone piece of paper." Well, that's a contract. A contract is an offer acceptance of that offer, at which point a contract arises by law and the offerer can no longer withdraw the offer. We teach, do not accept. That way there is no contract or agreement for you to go to their court or private club meeting. To escape government agency harassment like the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com. This is a tried and proven experienced process, not experimental, with a money-back guarantee that it works and success testimonials from previous students. Remember, escapeharassment.com. That's escapeharassment.com.
As many of you know, natural supplements are fantastic for your body and have zero side effects. You need to restore your body's natural balance. TerraVim strives to carry only the highest quality dietary supplements and natural vitamins that can be beneficial in helping your body recover from the impact of daily stress, allergens, illness, environmental pollution, and the aging process. Why buy from TerraVim? Simple. TerraVim provides a rewards program. Earn $1 for every $10 spent, free health consultations, free shipping on all orders, and an additional 10% discount on every order when you mention the coupon code RBN. Call 866-647-4372. That's 866-647-4372, or go to TerraVim.com. That's TerraVim.com. TerraVim, the best supplements on earth.
Herbal Healer Spring Sale. 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes. COQ10 with Hawthorne, Glucosamine Chondroitin, Sea Cucumber, Colloidal Minerals, Superfam and Super Male Plex, Colon Enhancer, our top-selling liquid, Cal Mag Vitamin D, MSM Sulfur Capsules, and Elderberry Power Capsules. We also offer certificate correspondence courses in natural medicine. Free memberships and free online newsletters also available at herbalhealer.com. Herbal Healer has been serving the natural medicine industry for 25 years. This is a company you can count on. Visit herbalhealer.com today. Herbalhealer.com. That's herbalhealer.com.
Hour of Spingola Speaks. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Carl Radl, R-A-D-L. He is the author of Communism and the Jews, A Source Reader, and the author of so many, many articles on his website, which is SemiticController.blogspot.com. Fabulous, fabulous articles, and you can sign up to receive his newsletter, and I recommend that you do that. Lots of scholarship on that website. My goodness.
I was going to quote Trotsky's diary on this because it's quite interesting what he actually says on the subject of the killings. He says, "Speaking Miss Sverdlov, I asked in passing, 'Oh yes, and where is the Tsar?' 'Finished,' he replied. 'He has been shot.' 'And where is the family?' 'The family along with him.' 'All?' I asked, apparently with a trace of surprise. 'All,' Sverdlov replied. 'Why?' He awaited my reaction. I made no reply. 'And who decided the matter?' I inquired. 'We decided it here.' Ilyich, which is Lenin, thought that we should not leave the White's alive banner, especially under the present difficult circumstances. I asked no more questions and considered the matter closely. The point really was that Trotsky was left out of it, but what that diary entry implies is that Trotsky, we wouldn't have done that. In fact, Trotsky was all for it. He just wanted it to be his way and have a big public trial and ending with the execution of the Tsar anyway, just not in a basement in what they called the House of Special Purpose, and then with the bodies being attempted to be burnt, then dumped in a cave. When that failed, then dumping them in a pit, putting railway sleepers over them and pouring sulfuric acid in. It was a pretty amateurish affair. And what's perhaps even worse about the entire scenario is that the deaths of the Romanovs were not quick. Because when the three shooters, including Yurovsky, went into the basement after they sent away a maid of the Tsarina's who was a Bolshevik, and a young boy called Leonid, who had served as Tsarevich Alexei's playmate, when they walked in, they told the Tsar, we are here to execute you via an announcement that Yurovsky made. And when they fired, all of a sudden chaos erupted, because they hadn't thought about they hadn't discovered where the Tsarina and her daughters had been hiding all their jewels, because they'd discovered earlier in the Tobolsk house that the Tsar and the Romanovs had taken a large amount of jewels with them, which was their version of portable wealth.
Right.
And they'd sewn the jewels up into their bodices. So when they had these, because they had these on because they thought they were going to go to another house, they acted like bulletproof vests, but with jewels.
Oh, sure.
So they fired and smoke. Lots of smoke. There's lots of smoke, lots of dust and so forth. And by the time the smoke had cleared and they'd emptied something like the region of 3 clips each, which is quite a lot of bullets, they had discovered that basically all the women were alive. They were hurt, but they were they're very much alive. So they ended up getting these additional soldiers in to, with bayonets and bayoneting them to death, then shooting them in the head a couple of times each to make sure that they were dead. And at that point, they started stripping them of all their clothes to work out what happened. And sure. They discovered the jewels.
So kind of a bonus.
Yeah, kind of a bonus, and some of the men tried to steal them, of course.
Sure.
And that basically they ended up getting shot for that as well. There is a myth to do with the death of the Romanovs, that that the Romanovs were decapitated and their heads were taken to Trotsky in Moscow, who then did some archaic Jewish ritual with them. That myth comes from General Diederichs, who is the man who eventually liberated the house. It is very much a myth, and the reason we know it's a myth is because when the bodies were dug up in 2007, 2008, they were not decapitated at all.
Okay, and they did they did dig up all the bodies. All the bodies were there.
And they've identified all of them by genetics as to which one's which.
Okay.
So that they now know that that was actually a myth, although it was a very plausible one, if you want my opinion, up until that had occurred. In large part because that kind of behavior wasn't exactly foreign to the Russian Civil War, where you did have people decapitated and their heads sent places as proof that they were dead.
Sure.
Since
I mean, that's been kind of an old tactic or an old practice in some cultures for generations, for centuries. Cut their head off.
Or much as eating someone's heart in Syria.
Sure.
The disposal was, again, it was completely southern, as I've already indicated, because they tried to do what you might call a Holocaust scenario, where they piled all the bodies into a heap and then doused them in fuel to burn them. This was not a success at all.
Imagine that.
Because, yeah, I wonder why. Because the pit, because of course the pit was, you know, this would take hours and hours and hours, and they didn't have hours. For some reason, they believed that human bodies were combustible, which is a pointer to one of our favorite myths, of course. And they ended up trying to pour sulfuric acid on them. This failed again because the bodies just weren't decomposing fast enough. And so Yulovsky basically panicked at this point and had all but two of the bodies dug up. That's the body of, I think, Princess Anastasia and their loyal maid dug up, because they were sufficiently decomposed, having been on the bottom. And these two bodies were then covered over in the separate grave. And they then took these additional bodies to a mine called the Four Brothers, named for four fir trees. Which they threw all these bodies in, and they tried to weight them down. But then they discovered that the mine, in fact, wasn't deep enough, so that the bodies kept floating to the top and could be seen if you looked into the pool. So they had to spend the best part of 3 or 4 hours fishing these bodies covered in sulfuric acid back out again, and carting them off elsewhere to a field called the Poznanikov Log, which means pig's meadow. Well, they doused them in a large amount of sulfuric acid again, and then they covered them over with some railway sleepers they'd stolen in a hole in the ground. And that is where they were found in 1979 by an amateur Russian archaeologist who is also a professional geologist by trade, and his wife. But he dared not excavate them properly because of the political sensitivity of the situation and the USR's official line, and left a time capsule after he'd done that, stating who he was, what he'd done, and just saying, I was here, and I would have done it had I had the chance. And in 2007, 2008, they were finally excavated, because it took so long because the old Russian Orthodox Church was objecting on grounds that they didn't want their version of events to be questioned, shall we say, would be the best way of putting it. And the testing took that long to happen because they just basically told any Romanov descendant, you will not give this scientific team any genetic material they can test against, because it's part of your religious duty. it wasn't exactly helpful, but I can sort of understand their reluctance, especially in the way that these situations, they tend to be used as kind of mythbreaker scenarios, where they go in and they try and exonerate people, which is what I suspect that they thought was going to happen, but it in fact didn't, because all that's now happened is that we now know Sverdlov, Lenin's involvement, as well as Goloshkin's and Yudovsky's, and the simple fact that at every level, the perpetrators were Jewish.
It is amazing that it took this long to do this. Of course, it was all concealed and as they planned. Alrighty, we are going to a break. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
Ground beef, eggs, butter, cheese, soup, sandwiches, strawberries, ice cream, coffee, and more. What do these foods have in common? They all come in storable, long shelf life food for you to save and use in uncertain times. Rather, if it is a meal or a snack for a family or just yourself, CampingSurvival.com offers a huge variety of storable food for you to be prepared anytime. Go to CampingSurvival.com to order all your food. Eat today, save it for tomorrow, or store it for years to come. CampingSurvival.com sells healthy, nutritious, storable food in number 10 cans and pouches. Order online today at CampingSurvival.com. Use code FREEDOM and receive 5% off. CampingSurvival.com. Remember, save 5% off with code FREEDOM at CampingSurvival.com on all your prepared food needs.
An effective 100% organic nutritional supplement is now available to be shipped out to you rush delivery. Heart and Body Extract is a 100% natural, organic, and wild-crafted formula made out of garlic, hawthorn berries, hawthorn leaves, coleus, motherwort, bilberry, butcher's broom kelp, mistletoe, ginger, and cayenne pepper. It is an excellent formula designed to balance and support the heart and circulatory system. It is extremely effective and starts to work within days. Order your 2-month supply by visiting heartandbody.com or by calling 866-295-5305. 866-295-5305. Take the high road to a long and happy life. HeartandBody.com.
John Stettmiller here. Gives me great pleasure to welcome our new sponsor, AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. They are a veteran-owned, Christian-based preparedness company. I know the owner, and I can tell you they share the same ideals and values that we do. From quality long-term food to self-defense and camping supplies, they have what you need to prepare. Great wholesale pricing, quality products, the best customer service. You just can't go wrong. One example, they have a 1-year food package that includes GMO-free vegetables and fruits, plus real meat like roast beef and chicken breast. Over 2,000 calories a day for $19.95. Not your run-of-the-mill carb bucket like a lot of them out there. From stun guns, batons, tents, gas masks, chemical suits, the list goes on and on. One thing you'll learn over time is value is defined by quality plus price. You get that value with AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. Tell them that John sent you and receive a free knife with your order today.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Carl Rattle. His website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. And you mentioned a few minutes ago in the program that the bodies aren't combustible, and we're talking about 7 bodies, the 5 children and the Tsar and his wife. And this certainly is, they really tried quite hard to dispose of the bodies via fire and the acid.
Yeah, they tried, but they didn't succeed, in large part because they hadn't, no one involved in the killings had any sort of background in medicine, body disposal, anything. They just assumed, much as Holocaust survivors, they were over to assert, assumed that you could burn bodies. And they acted a bit like fat does in a grill, in that it's quite combustible and it forms part of fuel. But it's always that moment. You see it in a couple of historical epochs, situations I've discovered, except just the Trial of Gilda, when you get assertions where people have used bodies as kindling, basically. And it's the same principle here, that people who don't know anything about body disposal have just accepted a myth without questioning the practicality of that myth and whether or not it could have happened, as opposed to the sources state as it happened, which tends to be the attitude of quite a lot of historians dealing with modern history, certainly.
Sure. Alrighty, we do have some callers lining up. People can call in at 800-313-9443 with questions. Should we take a call?
Yeah, please do.
All right, let's take Andrew in Rhode Island. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you very much. I am joining the show late, so if this has already been discussed, feel free to let me, I'll move on. But I called before. My grandfather came from Greece. He migrated to Russia at the turn of the century, and it was known as the Silver Age of Russia. So it was a good time to be in Russia before the revolution for many Europeans. And you saw this real hatred, and it's kind of ironic that Stalin appealed to Russian nationalism to try to win, and did succeed in defeating Germany, when in fact the communists were everything against Russian nationalism. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, completely.
I mean, it was kind of ironic how he appealed to the Russian people when he was the enemy of the Russian people. You also saw some real hatred to the Tsar's families. I mean, many were thrown down mine shafts and had grenades thrown on them. I mean, these people are pretty satanic, pretty evil folks. My question is this, and it may be off topic, it's really twofold. If you have a chance, a lot of historians have said that the Russians didn't see the Germans as liberators, but as oppressors, which I don't believe was the case, because I've heard stories of even Christian churches being reopened when the Germans
left
the area. So I don't know if there's any more information you could, maybe even in the subsequent show. And lastly, my question for more recent Russian history, we're told now, like in the 90s, that the Russians actually do control their own country now, not the Jewish communists. I don't know if there's any real truth to that. So those are my points, and I can hang up and wait your response. So thank you very much for your work.
Okay.
Thank you, Andrew.
The entire debate around the Third Reich's treatment of the people and how they were liberated, they were very much viewed as liberators, because bear in mind that till the late 1920s, and even the 1930s, there was still pogroms going on in Russia against the Jews for Soviet crimes. So they were very much viewed as liberators, and certainly the role of Jews, the very public role of Jews in communism, really helped that. And the Germans originally took a very practical line. They said, yes, we're going to encourage everything to happen as it was and get things back on the move. And their mistake, in many respects, was the fact that they failed in 1941, 1942 to gain the foothold, and they weren't prepared for their success rate. They didn't have the food resources. They didn't have the time to mop up Red Army partisans. So they ended up with an entire hinterland of places where the Germans were having to operate killing squads to fight partisans, and that actually, of course, created a bad security situation, which in turn created, tit-for-tat reprisals, so forth, and the end of a declining security situation, and that, in many respects, fed German policy. It's very similar, if you want to look at it, as the situation in Yugoslavia. Same thing happened. The same thing happened in the Baltics. And I always cite the example of Slovakia, with the people who talk about how anti-Slavic the Germans were. Well, then why did they create the Slovakian Republic? Why did they support Croatia? Why did they support you know, all these little sub-states that they were supporting, who were Slavics as well.
Sure.
And that's something that's always left out from people's, and a lot of what they call Slavic policy was, in fact, it was a bunch of policy ideas. Because what you had in the situation was people were discussing different ideas, how they do this, how they do that, and some of the strong ones that you are always quoted in much the same way. And there were discussions up till 1944, 1945, and if you look at the document readers, you'll see them, assessing how to deal with the Jewish problem, which is completely not cited in any Holocaust work I know of. The fact that in 1945 you have Germans discussing Jews should be settled in some area of Poland, possibly.
And of course the Poles were trying to get rid of their Jews too.
Mm-hmm. As they had pogroms out in 1946 and 1947, I do believe, subject of a couple of books by a Polish Jewish historian, whose name I can't remember, Jan Karski, he's a Holocaust survivor, he's Jan something anyway. And as to the Russians, well, I tend to say that they haven't really thrown it off, because they're currently, a lot of the power brokers in Russia are still Jewish. And
absolutely, yes.
And they're in the way of apologizing to Stalin most of the time these days. Quite famously in historical circles, you'll hear a comment about the fact that the Russians have now hired their own historians, effectively, to go and rewrite history. And they, for example, one historian who's particularly in with Putin, rewrote Beria's history, as in the most sadistic of all the heads of the NKVD and so forth, as being this kind of heroic figure who, you know, was only dealing with enemies of the state. And the fact, rewriting someone like Beria is absolutely awful, considering the man was a paedophile as well.
Oh, so, I have that book, Beria. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, he was absolutely awful. I mean, in terms of any Secret Service head, he was by far the worst.
Oh, absolutely. Psychopathic.
By quite a while. That's saying something, considering you've got people like Yezhikov in there, Felix Dzerzhinsky, Yelitsky, and so forth.
Right.
But yeah, that's basically he's right. It's just thought I'd just describe a bit of the other bits, if you will.
Right. I don't know why people believe that way, that everything's now going really well in Russia. When that was, well, I believe it was probably their second big base of communism out of this country, but why would they just all of a sudden relinquish it? Well, they wouldn't.
Yeah. No, they wouldn't, and they've just been, the logic of it is the fact that the Russians from 1960 onwards became, the Soviet Union became less and less overtly Jewish, in that it had, in that from the 1950s or so, it was still very much dominated by Jews to a large degree, but after the 1960s, once socialism was seen to have failed, Zionism came to kick in.
And exactly,
Jews became Zionists and started campaigning against the Soviet Union instead.
Sure. Alrighty, we are going to a 4-minute break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
My name is Don Wiskin. I had a massive heart attack at 42. The doctors could do nothing but send me home with disability as my future. I reversed the damage done to my heart with a natural remedy. I am now 58 and contribute my good health today to Extendivite. You have heard my messages for many years. A lot of people have taken Extendivite and improved their health issues. We are surrounded by fast food, toxic air, and chemicals that our body cannot eliminate. As we age, they can age us faster. Clean yourself out with Extendivite, available in capsule or liquid form. Get a 2-month supply for only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. You can live a longer, healthier life just by calling 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website, by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
That moment of panic, sheer terror, really. You're afraid to answer the phone, frightened by who might be at the door. If you're facing foreclosure or being harassed by debt collectors, you know the feeling. You need to visit whatliesinyourdebt.com to turn the tables on the banksters, collection agencies, and other crooks. Whatliesinyourdebt.com has solutions. Whatliesinyourdebt.com features live training webinars from experts, a member forum, support from experts who've been where you are right now and came out the other side in a better financial situation. If you are like millions of Americans who are behind on their mortgage, behind on their credit cards, or just being harassed by debt collectors, then this system is for you. We promise. If you cannot stop your foreclosure, even if it's imminent, if you cannot stop those debt collectors from bugging you, if you cannot clean up your credit, and finally, if you cannot make a few $1,000 during the entire process, make money from the debt collectors, yes, at whatliesinyourdebt.com, we will refund your money 100% in the first 60 days. Don't fear the bill collectors anymore. Visit whatliesinyourdebt.com.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule 1 drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
With financial uncertainty circling the globe due to job losses, decline in the housing market, a climate of corruption, bailouts, currency rigging, and unfair competition, many are once more turning to precious metals as the only hedge against the uncertainty of the future. With the U.S. House conducting hearings on proposals to confiscate workers' personal retirement accounts, including 401ks and IRAs, this is the time to secure your assets. Call Republic Trading Group today, 800-691-7898, before this happens, and find out how easy it is to convert your existing IRA and, in some instances, your 401k plan into real wealth now. Don't let the ravages of hyperinflation caused by the massive increase of fiat currency now flooding world markets affect your retirement account. Call RTG at 800-691-7898 and experience the security and peace of mind that only real gold and silver can offer. That number again is 800-691-7898.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Carl Rattle. He is the author of Communism and the Jews, a source reader. His website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. And we will take calls at 800-313-9443. All righty. So did you have any other responses to what Andrew said or your views on what is going on now?
In terms of?
In Russia, as far as, I believe the same power base is there.
Apart from the ADL throwing a absolute wobbly, if you hadn't noticed that lately,
right,
about gay rights in Russia, if you notice, while all of a sudden the Russians have been in the news a lot about, you know, that propaganda, the anti-homosexual propaganda bill, they've signed into law, I think it was earlier this year. And you've had all these, you know, celebrities come out. You've had Jews come out and so forth. But then the ADL comes out and starts screaming that it's about persecution of minorities. It's one small step from persecuting homos to being persecuting the Jews. And then all these Jewish organizations have joined in as well. It's quite bizarre, especially because at the same time, at exactly the same week it happened, the Israelis had just ruled against gay rights in Israel, and that didn't even merit a mention from the ADL, of course.
Of course
as not. You do. Not allowed to be critical when it's Israel, obviously. Sure. Any other government, yeah, it's all their fault. And then all of a sudden, Israel, no.
Right. Now, didn't the Bolsheviks actually get rid of a lot of the Christian churches in Russia, but
they retained
all the synagogues?
Yes and no. They went after the Christian churches quite drastically, in that they had their anti-religious weeklies, they had their the Christians were the ones they went after a lot in the early period, because the Christians were the ones most likely to be associated with what they might call the anti-revolutionaries, the counter-revolutionaries, whatever you wanted to call them. So they went around basically destroying convents, confiscating lands, defrocking nuns, priests, shooting them quite often as well. Synagogues, they did close some. They were primarily closed by Jews. Because you have to remember that the rabbinic system in Eastern Europe, the Kahal and the Kahilot, were very oppressive, by any standard, to the point where they were run as personal dictatorships by individual rabbinical families, and to the point where they would pass death sentences against other Jews who in some way let them down, defected, or turned what they called informer. So they told the authorities what the Jews had done or whatever, or they'd gone to the authorities without permission. Thus, they'd earned an automatic death sentence according to halakha.
Okay.
It's just that kind of, that the Jewish Bolsheviks naturally resented that. I can understand that to a degree. And they went after them, but they went after them much the same way as they went after the Christian churches before and later.
Now, what about Stalin being anti-Semitic? There are a lot of people say that, and of course he did have a lot of Jews around him, but of course some of them too were executed during the purge. So talk to us about that a little bit.
Okay, well, Stalin, the interesting thing about Stalin and what needs to be understood is that Stalin was very much a Marxist. He was a true believer, but he was also a practical man. And he believed, and he criticized it quite strongly, that Marxism should replace any national ties. So he fundamentally disagreed with Lenin's policy of having separate SSRs, Soviet Socialist Republics, like Belorussian, however you say that word. And effectively, what he was doing was trying to say to the Jews, you've got to get on board here, you've got to become pro-Bolsheviks by abandoning your Jewish heritage, which is where the purge trials in the 1950s and 40s come from, because that was the primary source for him supposedly being anti-Semitic, because Stalin had a policy of he wanted to localize the parties. So every political party, which was communist in Stalin's theory, should be represented by a Soviet enforcer, so someone who's making the party aware of the Soviet line, as they call it, or the policy at the moment, and they have locals. But he was also very conscious of the fact that having lots of minorities as senior members in the party, well, at a disproportionate of the party, was a very bad thing. And the classic example of that is Jews. When he invaded Lithuania, for example, in 1940, over the region of 50 to 30% of the Communist Party was Jewish. And Stalin basically flooded it with non-Jews, with non-Jewish members, and killed quite a few of the Jewish members. In part because they were what he would call left-wing deviationists, some people who were pro-Trotsky rather than pro-Stalin, but also because he wanted to equalize the balance and thus take away a weapon to be used against the Soviet Union and Marxism. Because remember, Stalin also supported Lysenkoism, and Lysenkoism took away the primacy of biology in biology, if you like. So the idea was the environment affected everything, and genetics were nonsense. It was one of his ideas, because basically, along with his views on what he called the class character of language, of William Marr, the fact that he tried to apply Marxism as a science to everything indicates that Stalin was looking at the Jews as being a sort of, well, you know, you've got to get on board here like everyone else. You've got to be, you've got to have your own politicians and get involved, but you shouldn't be overrepresented. But otherwise, that means you've got a disproportionate voice in the people, if you like. And the reason Stalin killed so many is because there were so many to kill. To give you an idea, in 1929, 8% of all propaganda officials in the Soviet Union were Jewish, according to their own statistics. And it was 12% of political commissars, and those are only the ones that are identified themselves as Jewish. These are not all the part Jews, the Jews who didn't feel Jewish, and so forth. So you've got a very big pool of people to kill, of people that you could potentially kill who are Jewish. So thus, any particular attacks you make on your own political structure is going to cause a disproportionate number of Jewish casualties, which thus creates this argument that Stalin was anti-Semitic.
Oh, okay. And of course, he was awfully paranoid too. I mean, he killed
people.
Yes.
Yeah. But that was in many respects was the Jews' own fault, because they knew he was paranoid from the purge of 1930s. They knew Stalin was paranoid. They knew he was worried of spies around him. So what did they do in the 1940s? Oh, they went and talked to all the Zionists. They became friendly with all the Zionists, and they began spouting out Zionist ideas in Russia. What happened after the war? Stalin began getting rid of all the intellectuals who wouldn't toe the line and split off from the West. And the large numbers of the Jewish intellectuals had now become basically socialist Zionists and had moved away from socialism. Thus, they were counter-revolutionaries, and therefore Stalin decided, you're the enemies of the state. And because he had been aware that the Jews had more or less, through their influence, massively influenced British policy, American policy, and French policy, and so forth, just after World War II, he was aware that they would come to do the same in Russia, and that they would take away his power from him. And also So that's kind of his thing. He wants to keep the power, and around him he sees a world where Jews are very, very powerful. They have successfully done something that no one in modern history has done, or even history has redone, is reconstituted the state after being, in quotes, diaspora for 2,000 years. So what does Stalin do? Stalin sees the Jews as being, a threat to his power, quite reasonably so, actually, because considering how many there were, and as Elizabeth Fitzpatrick has pointed out, in the late 1930s, 80 to 90% of Stalin's visitors were Jewish, according to surveys of his book, of his visitor book. And that in itself is very suggestive of the power they were wielding, and also why so many of them were killed, and also why Stalin felt they were that dangerous.
Well, and look what they had done to Nicholas II, and of course, Nicholas had done so many things for the Jews, and now here Stalin is the figurehead in Russia. Well, that would make you think, well, my next.
And my next, especially because his main rival, of course, was Trotsky, who was Jewish.
Exactly.
His major rivals in the early period, people like Kamenev, Zinoviev, and even Lenin, who he knew was part Jewish.
Exactly. Alrighty, we are going to a 3-minute break. We will be right back. We will take your calls at 800-313-9443.
There are many water filters to choose from, but there is only one system that is consistently customer rated 5 stars as the number one system for effective filtration of fluoride, radiation, drug residues, heavy metals, a wide range of radioisotopes, and more. Introducing the PureEffect Ultra, the next generation water filter that also raises alkaline pH, improves antioxidant potential, and has advanced anti-radiation technology. All while using no electricity. Sold worldwide, it provides virtually instant clean water on demand. It is not made in China, and the shipping is free to all 50 states. Buy your Pure Effect Ultra today by visiting PureEffectFilters.com or call 888-891-4821. Again, that's 888-891-4821 or visit PureEffectFilters.com.
The five self-evident truths of the Declaration of Independence are the standing definition of our Republican form of government. Each unalienable right has an attached duty because we are all created equal. Like the right, the duty is permanent and non-transferable. There can be no paper to lien the right and no paper to waive the duty. Deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed does not mean if you can think of it, you can consent to it. Truly, it names a condition where a right must be held without violation of its duty by both parties who can then consent. Our grand jury has been destroyed without the consent or the right. Return the grand jury customarily impaneled by the elected county sheriff and one where people can appear with information. McGilvery Machine Company, Reading, Michigan. Innovative research and development of prototype industrial equipment since 1988.
Don't answer it! How can I stop these annoying collection calls?
Imagine being free from your debt without settling and with no payment plan, no negotiating or filing bankruptcy, and no attorneys. What if you could eliminate the risk from all your unsecured debt in about 90 days and keep all your money? You can. It's called Zero Debt Guarantee, and it works. There's no other program of its kind on the planet, and we guarantee the results in writing. Call now, 800-477-9256. Let our team of experts provide you with the resources to fight back, stop collection calls, and prevent and stop wage garnishments and bank levies. If you're facing foreclosure, we can help. Don't go it alone. Get free information now by calling 800-477-9256. Talk to an expert who has also completed our program. Call 800-477-9256 for free info or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com. That's 800-477-9256 or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com.
Freedom ain't free, but shooting is cheap. Knob Creek Gun Range. Shoot safe, pay less, have fun. Rifles, pistols, shotguns, cannons, what you got? We got a 350-yard outdoor range, plus other secret ranges we're not even supposed to talk about. Come to Knob Creek Gun Range in West Point, Kentucky, and celebrate diversity at our next shoot coming up on October 11th, 12th, and the 13th. 690 Ritchie Lane, West Point, Kentucky, 40177. Visit our website at knobcreekrange.com to find out more information on everyday activities or to get information on the October shoot on October 11th, 12th, and the 13th. Or call 502-922-4457. Again, that's 502-922-4457. Knob Creek Gun Range, where the Second Amendment comes first. Go to knobcreekrange.com today or just show up ready to fire at 690 Ritchie Lane, West Point, Kentucky, 40177. Call 502-922-4457.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Carl Rattle. He is the author, author of Communism and the Jews, a source reader. His website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. And okay, I was just reading some of the comments in the chat room, and of course, psychopaths always think that others think just like they do, and of course, this probably contributed to Stalin's paranoia.
Mm-hmm. Well, so the question was, I mean, it's a long-standing question, actually, was Stalin actually psychotic? And people are really split on it. People don't, there's quite a few people who do not believe he was actually psychotic, but he was actually a very astute but very, very ruthless political operator. In much the same way that he more or less believed that anyone who, should we say, anyone who became close to him and knew too much had to be got rid of, but yet he was capable of having very intimate relationships, which is unusual if he was such a psychopath. Precisely because they do not have them. They tend to reject them at all times. Personally, I tend towards him not being, in large part because I don't think he actually shows any psychopathic tendencies, And the person I would say who's more likely to be a psychopath in that respect would be someone like Sverdlov, because Sverdlov had all the characteristics. He was absolutely, he was in many respects the unsung killer of the Soviet era. And that it was him, he largely created the Bolshevik state. And it was him, in large part with Stalin, who also displaced Lenin in some respects, in terms of being his enforcers, the people who made things happen, and the people who got their hands dirty, if you will, people who ordered the killings, and so forth. It's just that kind of lack of... Because we tend to associate Stalin as being an absolute monster, and he was a monster. But at the same time, there's a lot of historians who will say that he was actually quite a rational monster in some respects, because he did have to live on the edge, because people did want to kill him in a large degree, and it just got to him, and it probably just got to him in the end in some respects. And he started, and he was going, eventually just going around using anything he could to stay in power, and that included Russian nationalism, considering the fact that without it, he would not have survived World War II. And even then, World War II, he only survived because America intervened, especially because the statistics that have recently been looked at in some detail by military historians suggest that the Soviet Union, well, basically lost World War II in many respects.
Oh, sure. If they didn't have Lend-Lease, they wouldn't have made it at all. And nope. I think, too, that there were some traitors in the German high command in the military.
Yes, there were. There were some traitors in the German high command. But at the same time, we know that German statistics about casualties and the Soviet casualties are more or less correct, because they tally with Allied statistics at the same time. So the ones that don't tally are the Soviet ones. So the Soviet claim that they lost 20 million... is long been viewed as very skeptically, because the general belief is there was this massive Soviet population in 1941. In fact, there's only about 80 odd million of them at the time, which is the same population Germany had. All that was different was the amount of territory, and the Soviets were losing something in the region of 50-1 at one point during the war. And that ratio didn't really alleviate until 1944. So large numbers of Soviet men and women got killed, but it was never officially recognized, because of the fact that to do so would be to admit the fact that the Russians had more or less lost the war, apart from the Allies giving them huge amounts of equipment, which they couldn't produce themselves.
Right.
And a bit like the Israeli military, they were very, very good at information warfare. They were very good at pretending and illustrating a different reality to the one which was.
Right. Well, that's that is very interesting. Of course, they got so much help. Well, they always got, the Bolsheviks always got a lot of help out of New York and out of Washington early on. Didn't Wilson send $10 million over there? And mm-hmm. they had a lot of propaganda here because they had sent agents here early on.
Yep, and a lot of there's a common misconception that the idea that large numbers of the Soviet commissariats, as was, came from Brooklyn. In fact, it's not actually a myth, it's actually quite true. Because
right.
large numbers of them did come over, and they did go straight in as active and long-term Bolsheviks to being political commissars, which is why the political commissariat was as Jewish as it was, to the point where it was very difficult to find a unit in the Russian army, for example, that didn't have at least one Jewish commissar, even
right.
down to sort of a company level. There's a lot of myths about the Bolshevik rise to power, and one of the more interesting ones is the fact that there was no outside assistance, when in fact there was tons. The fact that Lenin more or less recapitalized Soviet Russia in 1919-1920 in order to pay for all this, for his war. He more or less claimed to American capitalists via several propaganda outlets that they could run factories in Russia producing cheap goods for them, if they would only donate large amounts of cash to him, and would thus benefit from large amounts of goods coming back and so forth. And what was discovered very relatively quickly, although it didn't stop the flow of cash, was that these goods just never appeared. And if they, and when they were inspected anyway, it was discovered they were of inferior quality, so there was a shoe factory that made shoes that basically fell apart as soon as you put them on. And another one, there was a fish, there was a fish canning factory that was supposed to work but never actually produced a tin of fish. Although it was built, and had employees, it never actually produced a tin of fish. And, there were several American, often Jewish communists who went from Brooklyn to the Russia, went into the New Economic Plan, as it was called, and then went straight back to the US as very rich capitalists. Because
right.
they've made huge amounts of money from having money donated to them, and then just sat there and accumulated it, and then gone back again on the excuse that they're going to spread the revolution, but in fact just went back and lived a life of luxury, having garnered all this cash from gullible American capitalists.
Sure. We have a couple more callers. Let's take Dan in Houston real quick. Dan?
What is your website again? I couldn't understand you. What was your website?
SemiticsControversies.blogspot.com.
I'm half dizzy. Say it slower, please.
Semitic Controversies. It's spelled S-E-M-I-T-I-C con, as in C-O-N-T-R-O-V-E-R-S-I-E-S .blogspot.com. If you type Semitic Controversies into Google, you'll find it.
Okay. Well, I was going to ask you about the House of American Activities Committee. I know in the 60s they showed how that, of course, the Jews in Washington, D.C., the Senators and Congress were devils, 3%, they shut it down. House of American Activities Committee. But I've still got a book I got back then, which Nora, you can get, how they had verification that all the concentration camps Hitler was murdering Jews and Baptists and everybody else in, that those concentration camps taken over by Hitler on the East were actually kept in full operation and killed more people than Hitler did in those same concentration camps. They had photographs. And it was denied at first, but then they got...
Okay, let Carl respond to you.
Yeah, and no, they took over camps that were used, but the Germans didn't really kill people in them. The Soviets did in large numbers. Then we verified those bodies, verified the names, so forth. Germans, not so much. We know people who died in them. We don't know often how they died, and we have no idea as to orders as to why that might have been, which is the whole point of revisionism. But other than that, there was a publication. I think I know the one you mean. It's a totalitarian comparison. But yeah, you're right about the fact that the Jews were very powerful in communism in the United States, as you can look at the early U.S. Communist Party, as that had a large amount of Jews in it.
Right. Well, thank you for your call, Dan. And thank you so much, Carl, for being on the program.
No problem. And thank you. And I'll hope to be back.
You will be. Talk to you soon. Thank you. Bye-bye, listeners. Talk with you tomorrow.
John Stone.